Okay.
Yeah.
Basically, just, you know, before we get started, you know, I'm a plant-based cardiologist in Florida. I'm a triathlete, and I started this podcast to try to get the message out to my patients and, you know, some people around. And, you know, I'm just, you know, sold on the Esselstyn way, basically, you know. So I have your books and your dad's books and your mom's books in the office, and you know, I'm doing a wellness class in the office and just trying to get, you know, get this word out. I'm the only one in town that's plant-based as far as physicians, and you know, kind of an uphill battle, but you know, it seems like the only way you can do it is kind of lead by example and hope some people will catch on.
Absolutely. Well, big congratulations to you and, you know, for taking this leap of faith. And sounds like there's not too many cardiologists that have embraced this. So you are one of the few. Way to go.
All right. Well, thanks. So welcome, Rip Esselstyn, the author of Engine 2 Cookbook and My Beef with Meat. It's a pleasure and honor to get to speak with you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you as well.
I think the Esselstyn plant-based low oil way is, you know, fantastic. I live by it. My family lives by it. Tell me, you know, I spoke to your mom and sister about their cookbook a while back.
Yeah.
And, you know, I asked them the question, you know, what was it like when your dad came home and said, okay, we're plant-based. Where were you in growing up when he...
Yay. Good question. So, you know, it's funny. We grew up eating basically the standard American fare, roast beef and, you know, cheese and ham and, you know, hamburgers on the grill, spare ribs, everything you can imagine, beef fondues. And then that all came to a screeching halt in 1984 when my father decided that he would start this research, this really revolutionary research to show that you could reverse heart disease by just changing what you put in your mouth. And at the time I was at the University of Texas at Austin, going to school. I had been there for 2 years. And so I got to experience kind of the plant-based lifestyle whenever I came home and, like for Christmas or Thanksgiving or the summertime. And my mom was just an absolute terror in the kitchen, and she was fearless and she had so much courage. And, you know, this was before there was 150 different, you know, great plant-based cookbooks that are out there. And she was creating these masterpieces, and I was like, wow, mommy, this is really fantastic stuff. And so that's when I first got exposed to it. It was 1984 when I would come home for vacation from the University of Texas at Austin. And then I personally didn't embark on this journey full time until I graduated from the University of Texas at Austin. I was away from the athletic training table. I swam at the University of Texas on a swimming scholarship. And so I was eating with the football players and the basketball players and the football players. And it was steak and chicken fried steak and cheese pepperoni pizza and scrambled eggs and bacon and ham and cheese sandwiches on white bread with mayonnaise and ice cream. And it was really incredible how awful the food was that they serve all these scholarship athletes. But that was, you know, that was the order of the day. And, you know, they really didn't know any better. But so when I graduated in December of 1986, from that point on, I've been eating what I like to call a plant strong diet.
Oh, good. So did you go from swimming to triathlon directly, or was there a hiatus, or how did that all come about?
Yeah. So, my career as a collegiate swimmer, ended in 1986 when I graduated. And then I decided that I did not want a normal job, a normal corporate job. And I always loved being an athlete. And so I saw a friend do a triathlon in the summer of 1986. I was fascinated by it. and fascinated by the three disciplines, swimming, biking, and running, and who could you know, do all three back to back to back, the quickest with the shortest transition times. And I was in just really total admiration of the first couple athletes across the finish line, and to just see how they look like absolute stallions. And so I spent 6 months basically training, biking, running, swimming after I graduated from University of Texas. And I did, then I competed in my first triathlon. And by the end of 1987, I done well enough in three USTA sanctioned triathlons that I qualified to race as a pro. And the last race that I did in 1987 in August was the Chicago International Triathlon. They had over 4,000 participants, and I had a pro card, and I was racing for prize money, and I crossed the finish line in ninth place, and I got $600. and I phoned home, and I said, "Mommy and Daddy, guess what? I'm officially a pro. I just won money." And that was the start of what would end up being a, you know, almost 10 years fully devoted to triathlons. And then I kept competing until 2005. Even when I was a firefighter, I kept competing at a world-class level in the Xterra off-road triathlons.
Wow. So you were setting it. So were you plant-based at that time then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I tell people that, you know, when you go plant-based as an athlete, you're giving yourself just every advantage possible to be the best athlete you can be. You know, you're taking in plant-friendly proteins and unprocessed, predominantly complex carbohydrates. You're taking in really only the essential fats in their whole source form. You're taking in phytonutrients and antioxidants that combat all the oxidative stress that you're putting on your body as an athlete in training. You're taking in fiber, you know, so you're usually as regular as a Swiss commuter train. So you're always light, and you feel very light and unencumbered and free. And also it really built my immune system up to where I could do these insane amounts of hours of training, and I very, very infrequently got sick, and I recovered much more easily. My racing performance was very, I didn't have a lot of peaks and troughs. I was very, very kind of very, more than not, I was on the top of my game. And, you know, more and more, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see more elite athletes, whether it's NFL football players, whether it's baseball players, whether it's soccer, whether it's Olympians, tennis players, endurance runners, track and field athletes. They're going to be gravitating towards a whole food plant-based diet because you're putting in just the best and the brightest foods that are out there that have minimal amounts of garbage and unhealthy calories.
It surprises me that it hasn't caught on at the collegiate level. You know, my daughter she's a Division I rower at West Virginia University. Her boyfriend was on the football team there, and you know, different areas that they just don't seem. She's given all kinds of grief from the nutrition department there for you know, being plant based, and it just surprises me that it hasn't caught on there. It hasn't caught on an Olympic level yet. I mean, I guess it's more politically or it's more political. As you think that's why it's kind of slow.
Well, there's a number of reasons. I mean, they're back in the Paleolithic times when it comes to nutrition. I mean, you know, all these collegiate sports. I can't name names, but I was asked to go and just give a talk to a bunch of NCAA Division I collegiate male runners, and at the last minute, the head of the athletic department basically canceled it because he didn't want their runners doing anything that might be injurious to their performance. like somehow, you know, them eating more fruits and vegetables and whole grains and beans would somehow, you know, be harmful to their performance. So, you know, we've got decades and decades of just inherent inaccurate nutritional beliefs that we've got to overcome. I mean, and most Americans and most nutritionists these days are taught that, you know, dairy products, you need them for calcium and healthy bones and a strong body, and they're highly absorbable, which is, you know, it's all absolute bunk. You know, that you need meat for protein, you need fish for omega-3 fatty acids, you need, you know, olive oil for the healthy monounsaturated fats, and all of it is just, it's a bunch of crock. It's a bunch of crock. So we've got so much inertia that we have to overcome, and so much education that we have to introduce.
Yeah, it's funny that, you know, everybody wants to be like a Kenyan except for how they eat. You know, it's like, oh, you know, why can't we beat the Kenyans? We'll go train at altitude, we'll do everything else, but we're not going to eat like them, you know?
Well, exactly, yeah.
So, triathlon, you started working at a fire station, and as the story goes, for my readers that haven't, or listeners that haven't read your book, basically there came a challenge for who had the best cholesterol.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we had a challenge. We had a little bet while sitting on the porch to see who had the lowest cholesterol, and we, the next morning, if you're a firefighter, you always file through on a bet, right? And so the next morning we jumped in the unit, we drove down to a pharmacy, we got our cholesterol checked, and my buddy JR, his cholesterol at the age of 33 was 344. And we found out that his great-grandfather, his grandfather had both died before the age of 51, and that his dad had triple bypass at 52, and he just had this horrendous family history of men in his family dying at a young age. And so as a group of firefighters, we decided that we would go plant strong. And I asked him to do it first for just 28 days, and then that 28 days turned out to be years and years and years, and we created a healthy eating revolution at Fire Station 2 in the most unlikely place imaginable, and that's a firehouse in Austin, Texas. But JR, in 28 days, his cholesterol came down from 344 to 196. The only thing that he really changed was what he was putting in his mouth, right? He lost weight. The other guys at the station lost weight. They were sleeping better. They had increased energy. They were more regular. You know, a lot of these guys had acid reflux that basically vanished. And it's just, you know, I think that almost everybody overlooks the power that nutrition has to heal and make us healthy. And I think that when it comes to medicine, it's not only, you know, overlooked, it's the most underutilized tool in the in most physicians, you know, kind of bag of tricks.
Oh yeah, it's the nutrition lecture goes like, you need to lose weight. See you next time. Maybe try. I even have people, you know, they recommend South Beach is about the healthiest diet that anybody around here recommends, and they go bananas, you know. I think you were in a unique population, because basically a bunch of young guys that typically that's where it really needs to start, is the young people that don't realize how unhealthy that they are. And you know, you've targeted them, you know, right up front. So, I mean, I that was just a great place to raise awareness that, you know, here we are, a bunch of firefighters, and everybody thinks that they're, you know, they don't have any pain other than the natural reflux. And they think everybody gets heartburn because you're eating the spicy ribs, and that's natural. You know, and now, you know, you've identified identified them. That's why, you know, I use your book a lot, because of Engine 2 Diet. I do have firefighters that come in, you know, because they flunked their physicals. And, you know, I try to, you know, I use that book because I think it resonates with the younger crowd better. And I think it resonates with guys better, because your recipes tend to be bigger portions, tend to be more spicy. You mix things together that guys would mix together, as opposed to, you know, it's more of the bulky type of recipes. I think, you know, I've seen we have a Charlotte County plant-based foodies group here, and they've tried to go to local restaurants and have the chefs make low-oil vegan food. Well, what typically happens is they bring out this little portion of food. I always go home hungry. And it's like, you know, and I'm looking around, it's like, you'll never get these guys to go plant-based giving them these little portions of food.
No, I know. Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's one of the reasons why I feel like the Engine 2 has been such a success, is because it's not a bunch of turtle or rabbit food, or, you know, just a bunch of salads and twigs and berries. It's anything but that. So, you know, what we did is we took basically everything that a Texas firefighter loves, which is burgers and pizza and fajitas and ice cream, and then we just made healthier versions of those things. So instead of doing a beef burger with layers of cheese and bacon on top on white bread with mayonnaise and all kinds of junk, we would, on a whole grain bun, we would do a poblano black bean burger, or we'd do a white bean and kale burger, or we'd do a portobello mushroom burger with sauteed mushrooms and caramelized onions and salsa and a little bit of guacamole. And we have sweet potato fries that were baked on parchment paper. And, you know, I mean, and it's just as delicious, and it doesn't sit in your stomach like a bowling ball. And if you have to go fight a fire 10 minutes after eating, you know, you're not in this comatose state, and you're not going to barf it up into your mask. So, you know, instead of doing cheese pizza with pepperoni and sausage, we'd roll our own crust at the firehouse, and then we'd put either a nice clean marinara sauce or a barbecue sauce or homemade spinach hummus sauce, or even a pesto sauce. And then on top of that, we'd do artichoke hearts and sun-dried tomatoes and bell peppers and mushrooms and onions, and sun-dried tomatoes, and broccoli and spinach. And I mean, these were just, you know, pizza extravaganzas. And then instead of, I'm going into the food here. I'm getting hungry. And then we also would do, instead of doing like beef fajitas, we would do butternut squash fajitas, or we would do tempeh fajitas or portobello mushroom fajitas with all the fixings. But we'd use no fat refried beans, and we'd do bell peppers and onions that were not sauteed in butter or oil, but instead orange juice or pineapple juice or veggie broth. And we'd have them on corn tortillas, which are typically always very, very clean, as opposed to the flour tortillas. They're just, you know, bleached white flour and lard and a bunch of junk. And then we'd make our own ice creams. We'd freeze mangoes and bananas, and we'd either put them into a really high-speed blender and with a little bit of vanilla extract towards the end, we got a Yonana machine, which is, you can get it on Amazon for like $49, but you just put the frozen fruit into the top of it, and it spits out soft serve frozen sorbet ice cream, which is fantastic. And for lunches, we would do we do all kinds of open-faced sandwiches with hummus and kale and cilantro and tomatoes and cucumbers and roasted red bell peppers and avocados. And instead of doing sloppy joes made with, you know, hamburger meat, we would do red lentil sloppy joes with tomato paste and garlic and red lentils that were just out of sight. And then for breakfast, we would do steel cut oatmeal. We would do migas especiales, which is a Texas favorite, made from made from tofu and mushrooms and onions and corn tortillas that we'd slice up and into eight pieces and then throw in there in the skillet. We would do whole grain pancakes, spelt blueberry pancakes. We'd make muffins. We would try and start every dinner off with a big salad. Usually romaine lettuce was the base, and we'd add in black beans and chickpeas and red bell peppers and mandarin oranges and strawberries, and we'd make our own homemade dressing that had no added oil in it. But anyway, you get the feeling, and I'll stop for a sec.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking, geez, which one do I want to have next?
Yeah.
I've tried several of the recipes, and they're all fantastic. The sloppy joes are great. I've done your breakfasts and the lasagna. They're all really good. And again, I think that they're of a size that, you know, most either athletes or guys that need more calories are used to eating. Because I find people that try to do this, you know, one of the reasons they'll say they fail is, well, they feel weak. They're hungry. They don't think they're getting enough to eat. And of course, my patients say, the first thing that comes out of their mouth, I can't live on carrots and celery. And it's like, after I've talked to them for an hour and I've never mentioned the word carrots or celery, you know, it's like, what part of this, you know, it's like, I never mentioned carrots or celery. You don't, you know, I don't care if you ever eat a carrot, if you don't want to, you know, but.
Well, I mean, people have a preconceived notion about what it means to eat plant-based, right?
Yes.
They, like I said, they think it's carrots and celery and salads and twigs and berries, and nothing could be further from the truth. And the reality is that 99% of the food on the planet comes from plants, and a minuscule 1% comes from animals and animal byproducts. But those are the foods that we are singularly focused on as Americans. And most people don't know that there's almost 200 different varieties of potatoes. There's, you know, 15 to 20 different types of cruciferous leafy green vegetables. There's over 20 different varieties of just, you know, whole grain rices that are out there that you can play with. And then there's millet and amaranth and quinoa and teff. And I mean, the list goes on and on and on, and all the different fruits that are out there. And, you know, the sad reality is that most Americans only rotate through right around 10 different fruits and vegetables their whole lives. And so they have their blinders on, and it's, you know, they're doing chicken breast, and they're doing salmon, and they're doing hamburger meat, and they're doing, you know, it's just, you know, they have no variety in their diet. And their breakfasts are maybe a piece of toast with some butter and a little jam on it, maybe some cereal with milk. Lunches, if they have them, are usually abysmal. At the fire station, these guys, I mean, it was, you know, white Wonder Bread with cold cuts, some cheese slices, and some mayo. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And then we wonder why we have, you know, these epidemic proportions of heart disease and cancer and diabetes and obesity. And, you know, speaking just about firefighters, you know, the latest research and studies that came out of Fire Engineering Magazine show that almost 80% of firefighters across this country are overweight or obese. And firefighters have the highest incidence of in the line of duty deaths of any profession out there. And, you know, it's because the culture is brisk with it's just testosterone laden. And if you're not eating steaks and hamburgers and ice cream, and if every other meal isn't something that's deep fried, then, you know, you're probably not in a firehouse. And that needs to change.
What happens now when, you know, you get a new person into your station? Do they do plant-based? Do you tell them if you're going to eat meat, you got to bring your own? How does that work?
Well, that's a good question. I want you to know that. So I officially retired from the Austin Fire Department after 12 years, 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. After the success of the Engine 2 diet, I got some really amazing opportunities to take helping people and saving lives to a whole nother level. And so I pursued it I've got a partnership going with Whole Foods Market and a whole line of healthy Engine 2 plant strong food products. And I lecture all over the country to Whole Food customers and team members, and then just communities in general. But at the fire station, what happened is something very interesting. So, you know, we started this this Plant Strong fire station in 2003. We started getting a lot of publicity for the way we ate in 2005 and 2006. And I think in 2005 is when we started, some of the guys that were there from 2003, they either promoted or they retired, and so we would have to get a new firefighter or a new specialist or a new lieutenant in. And they knew that Fire Station 2 was the plant-based fire station, right? And it's amazing how many firefighters from across the city of Austin wanted what we had. They wanted to be part of this culture that absolutely valued and cherished eating healthily, working out regularly. You know, every afternoon we would do a CrossFit session out in the truck room. We'd open up the doors and we'd have this killer hour-long CrossFit session. And you know, we'd rotate who would buy groceries and then cook dinner. We also would take leftovers, and that would make for a lunch the next day, and then we'd always figure out what we were going to do for a breakfast. But we had anywhere between 3 to 4 plant strong meals every shift at the fire station. And anyway, that's a long-winded answer to your question, that people that came, they knew what they were getting into, and they wanted what we had.
I would guess that somebody, I mean, again, the politics kind of mess up everything, but you would think that, you know, workman's comp, injuries, overall fitness, days off from work would be so much better in Engine 2 than the rest of the fire department and probably the, you know, another county offices, the police department. You would think that it would be encouraged or, you know, for everybody.
Well, it's interesting because one of the things that happened is that the Austin Fire Department, Austin is now the 11th largest city in the United States, and I can't believe how fast it's grown. But we have over 1,000 firefighters. We have 45 different stations now, and we have an in-house fire department physician, and he sees every firefighter that comes through. Every year, because everybody has an annual physical. And so he knows, you know, he knows what people's cholesterol levels are, their blood pressure, their weight, if they have metabolic syndrome, you know, if they're pre-diabetic, diabetic, all those things. And when he found out about what we were doing, he was very intrigued. And when he found out that I was writing a book called The Engine 2 Diet, the Texas Firefighters 28-Day Save Your Life Plan, he wanted in. And so he himself did the 28-day challenge. His cholesterol dropped 80 points in 28 days. He dropped about 20 pounds. He then did his own due diligence and looked up my father and my father's research and Dean Ornish and Neil Barnard. And so the cool thing is that now every firefighter that goes through his doors that is either overweight or has high blood pressure or is metabolic syndrome or is pre-diabetic or even type 2 diabetic, he tells them, do engine 2, right? And so we have a fantastic fan within the fire department that is helping to, you know, get the word out.
That's fantastic. You know, I mean, there's just so much support. Because you would, you know, traditionally you would think it would be, you know, the other way around and it would be so hard to get going. Have you done any lectures? You know, I mean, I read, I'm blocking on the guy that got run over. He was a New York firefighter. He got run over and came back and did a marathon. But there's the competition between the New York Fire Department and the New York Police Department as far as with a New York Marathon for sure and various things. Have you done anything with any other states or any other fire departments in other states?
Well, one of the things that I do is I get around with my line of work with Whole Foods Market, and so I try and visit firehouses all over the country, and it's really, really cool. We have pockets of firehouses everywhere that are starting to eat this way, whether it's Las Vegas, whether it's Annapolis, whether it's Orange County, Florida. I just got back visiting with one of the Tampa fire stations where we cooked them a whole plant strong meal. Michigan firefighters, Los Angeles. I mean, you know, firefighters, they're a stubborn lot. They're tough nuts to crack, but they it's being cracked, right? The code is being cracked a little bit. I think these guys are starting to get it. And you know, the old school firefighters that, you know, they would smoke, you know, they would eat whatever they wanted. They're kind of going by the wayside, and you have this whole new breed of firefighter that realizes that, you know what, you don't want to, A, you don't want to smoke, and B, you know what, maybe there is something to eating healthfully. And so, no, I see it all the time, and I get all these great success stories coming into my email box all the time, and I love it.
Yeah, I mean that's fantastic. And then you were talking about the CrossFit. You know, the CrossFit people seems to be more of a paleo movement there than more plant-based. You know, the plant-based are more the endurance athletes and runners, or at least traditionally, you know, the people that were. So, you know, do you have any, I guess, feedback from that aspect? You know, why aren't we paleo, or the, you know, that in that community type of thing?
Well, it's amazing how much traction the paleo movement has gotten. And as you know, Dr. John McDougall loves to say, people love to hear good news about their bad habits. And you know, everybody wants to figure out a way to they can continue eating meat, and they try and rationalize that, you know, this is what our paleo ancestors ate. And you know, I cannot condone in any way, shape, or form. In the year 2014, where we have 7 billion people on the planet, and we are killing 70 billion animals a year for our insatiable appetite for, you know, for animal products and animal byproducts. And it is responsible for almost a third of the fresh water on planet Earth. It's responsible for 45% of all arable land on planet Earth. And the reason I say that is because, you know, 70 billion animals require an insane amount of water and an insane amount of feed and grain. And so, you know, there's so much of planet Earth that's being used to grow grains to feed livestock, for example. One cow eats 200 pounds of grains a day. And so, you know, everybody, I think, on this, just about everybody now believes that climate change is for real. And the number one promoter of global greenhouse gas emissions is animal agriculture, whether it is the supply chain or the life cycle of these 70 billion animals. They are basically destroying our climate. And some of the latest research out of the World Bank and the World Watch Institute show that animal agriculture is responsible for up to 50% of global greenhouse gas emissions. So the best thing that anybody can do starting tomorrow, it's not to go solar or, you know, to buy a Prius or to bike to work. It is to start eating plant strong. So paleo, you know, although I do like some of their tenants, I love the fact that, you know, they're not a fan of dairy products. They're not a fan of processed and refined products. It's fantastic. But, you know, the fact that they are promoters of meat is not going to – that dog's not going to hunt. And then the fact that they are they're against, you know, whole intact grains and beans is – that's a whole other story And I think they're missing the boat on that as well.
Yeah, I was, when I was preparing today, I was thinking a little bit, you know, you see that, and I heard somebody else, you know, make a little bit of a reference. When you see the traditional strong firefighter, and typically, you know, the good ad is getting the kitten out of the tree, it's always the strong, muscular guy. It's not the fat, chubby guy, but it's the fat, chubby guy that is the guy that's usually stuck on the meat and the steak and the barbecue. So, it, you know, it's somewhat ironic that, again, like, you know, I guess the guys that have it don't have to flaunt it, but the other guys are hanging on to the, you know, I guess, like you say, they're bad habits. So,
yeah, totally. Yep.
So, so you're doing the tours, and so are the seminars that you're doing in the different parts. Are they, so they're hooked onto Whole Foods for the most part?
No. So we do a couple different events. So we do our weekend long retreats, and we have those all over the country. We'll be coming out with our venues for 2015, probably in the next 2 months. But then we also, what we do with Whole Foods is we do a week-long immersion program in Sedona, Arizona, and that's going to be in May this year. And we take about 70 Whole Food team members that they have to medically qualify to attend, and Whole Food sponsors them to go. And it's basically a food camp where for 1 week we educate them, and we also not only on the science, but also on, you know, how to eat this way, what to eat. We work out. We eat three amazing plant-strong meals every day. It's a medical immersion, so we have a medical director there. We do before and after biometric screenings of every participant from, you know, a total lipid panel with total cholesterol, LDL, HDL, triglycerides, risk ratio. We do blood pressure. We do weigh-in. We do fasting glucose, and most of these people, in order to qualify, they have to be hypertensive, they have to be pre-diabetic, or type 2 diabetic, they have to have just different criteria. And it's amazing how in just 7 days these people are getting off their medications. Their cholesterol is coming down anywhere between 30 to 100 points, and it's almost magical what can happen in just 7 days. But it happens, and it happens every time. We've been doing this now for 4 years. We've had 900 people go through the program, and it is nothing short of a miracle what can happen when you change what you put in your mouth. And those are open. We've recently opened those week-long immersions up to the public. We have 30 slots available for other members that want to join in on that one.
Great. And then you have other retreats that are separate?
And then we have other retreats, and those are just weekend retreats that are all over the country, and that's a Saturday and a Sunday. And this year it's looking like we're going to have one in one in Detroit, Michigan, Vegas. We'll do our annual pilgrimage to our farm in upstate New York. We affectionately call that one Plant Stock, because it's about 45 minutes from where Woodstock was back in 1969, I think it was. And then we're looking for one other venue, and it actually might be Florida.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on hitting up the triathlon communities with, you know, either Ironman or the HIIT series or, you know, some of the other groups that have, I'm blocking on the other guys that just came into this country. They were more of a European triathlon company.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, I will always have a soft spot in my heart for, you know, the triathlon community and triathletes. I love that sport. You know, I don't know if we're going to specifically do anything where we target partnering with different triathlon organizations, but I would just encourage any triathlete who wants to improve their performance and their health to, you know, consider either buying, you know, one of my books or my father's books or coming to one of our retreats. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this chocolate milk campaign thing. I mean, I know, you know, we're talking about your first triathlon, you made $600, and I kind of giggled to myself when you probably called your dad. He's like, "Well, when are you going to get a real job, son?" But yeah. you know, because it's so hard for triathletes to make a living in the sport. I mean, you know, there's a few at the top that do well, and they have to rely on sponsors. And you know, the dairy industry has seen this $2 billion sports drink industry as, you know, a big ticket. And I think that's, you know, they've really got a stronghold, and I just can't believe these guys are actually drinking chocolate milk after they do the triathlons without getting sick, you know, or doubling over. But
it is amazing how the milk industry just continues to pile it on, and how we continue to fall for it. Although, you know, there's been some recent meta-analyses that have, you know, really shown that milk does nobody any good. I don't know if you've seen them. They've been out just in the last week or two.
Right, yeah.
It's basically they're throwing milk to the curb. It's pretty good stuff.
Well, there's one dairy company, I forget what it is, that they're actually now making almond milk. So I think some of these people are seeing the writing on the wall. And, you know, starting to branch out into the different, you know, almond milk and soy milk, things. The other thing that I lost my train of thought, but with Cowspiracy, they interviewed a dairy farmer, and he was, you know, kind of one of the more family dairy farm guys. And he admitted that there's just no way that this is actually something that can keep going on. It just won't work.
No, I saw Cowspiracy. Loved it. I thought Kip Anderson and his partner did a fantastic job. And that was pretty enlightening what that dairy farmer had to say.
Yeah, you could just tell that, you know, he was starting to, you know, think of different ways, or that, you know, he could see that this was not going to be a long lasting career for him. Well,
yeah.
Turning back over to, and your children, when I spoke with your mom, you know, the whole Esselstyn crew is plant-based for the most part. Any issues or advice for people with children and kids going to school and how you deal with your family?
Well, you know, so I've got a 7-year-old, I got a 5-year-old, and I've got an eight-month-old, and they're all 100% plant-based, have been their whole lives. And they are absolutely, you know, bright, intelligent, thriving, athletic kids, at least the 7 and the 5-year-old. The 8-month-old is, you know, she still just kind of hangs around. they, at a young age, they took to eating plants. You know, we started out by feeding them sweet potatoes and mushed up black beans and different kinds of, you know, oatmeal and rice, like a rice porridge type dish when they were really, really young. And, you know, now they love cheeseless pizzas on a whole grain crust. They love breakfast burritos with potatoes and beans inside. They love steel cutouts and oatmeal. They love broccoli. They still won't touch spinach or, you know, anything like that. they love the plant-based burgers. They love bananas and grapefruit and oranges and strawberries and mangoes. And, I mean, these guys are getting just so many servings of fruits and vegetables in every day. It is absolutely – it's awesome. And they are – Cole, who's my 7-year-old son – he's at the 90th percentile in height and 75th percentile in weight. And Sophie, who's 5, is the 50th percentile in height and 50th percentile in weight. And it's funny, the other day she had a just a regular checkup, and she was 52 inches tall and 52 pounds. So we said, "Wow, you're perfect square." it was very funny. But in our eight-month-old is like 23 pounds, and she's just as healthy as can be and doing fabulous. And there's always going to be challenges with neighbors and family and friends and and parents at school, you know, thinking that you're somehow abusing your children if you're not giving them meat and for protein and dairy for calcium. And, you know, the sad reality is that they've got it absolutely ass backwards, and that, you know, they're the ones that are abusing their children by getting them hooked on, you know, these unhealthy foods at a young age. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why almost 80% of girls by the age of 10 have gone on a diet. It's why we have 1 out of 5 kids that are considered obese by age 10. And, you know, we now have these teenage incidents of type 2 diabetes. And I saw it as a firefighter. You know, the majority of our 911 calls are medical related, and so we saw up close and personal the rampant amount of type 2 diabetes that is starting to hit this nation. But you know, I would just tell parents to, once you have the knowledge and you understand it, that your kids are going to be getting the healthiest calories on the planet, you're not going to fall for any of the peer pressure that you're going to be exposed to everywhere you go. And my hope is that that's going to dramatically change over the next decade, that more and more and more people will be exposed to this message, to the knowledge, there'll be more offerings, and people will come around, that the current paradigm is 100% broken. And the answer is as far away as your fork. And you don't need to look any farther.
Yeah, it's amazing how, you know, healthy that the kids could be. And even around, you know, we have a lot of kids on government-assisted lunch programs. And I went there and talked, and they have, you know, egg sandwiches and things like that. And I talked, it's like, well, why not just a big oatmeal bar? You know, you'll save the school district money. You could have fruits and oatmeal and all that kind of stuff, you know. The kids will catch on and they'll like it. And they, you know, it's crazy that, you know, they think they have to offer, you know, McDonald's type version food to these kids. You know, certainly if they're given the choice early, you know, if they're given a choice between some goofy, goopy sandwich early on and the oatmeal, they're not going to do it, but just get rid of it, you know, and they'll eat it. You know, they're hungry, they'll eat it. And
yep. Yep, I know. I mean, you really, at some point, we're going to, it's, you know, it's a little bit of tough love, no doubt about it. And the older the kids are, a lot of times the harder it is. So, you know, if they're 10, 11, 12, 13, I understand that they're going to, you know, they're going to push back pretty darn hard. But I think if you can relate it to them in a message that's couched the right way, and, you know, share the education with them, and let them know we're doing this out of love for that we have for you guys, and we want to, you know, give you guys the best possible chance for a long, healthy life. And the science is just crystal clear that, you know, if you can at a young age start to follow a whole food, plant-based lifestyle, you're going to set yourself up and put all the odds in your favor that you don't have to go down the road that the majority of Americans are going down right now, which is not a pretty one.
No, it's not. Well, I have to turn it to a personal, Nelson, get some personal questions for myself. You know, you're a collegiate swimmer and triathlete, and I'm a old lady triathlete. I was started out as a marathoner and turned triathlete here in the last few years. So, swimming smooth, total immersion. What's your take on some of these?
Swimming smooth. I don't know if I've ever heard of that. Total immersion. I have heard of total immersion. You know, I mean, I think anything you can do to try and mix it up in the water is a good thing. You know, lengthening the vessel, swimming downhill, pressing the tee, all those things, I think have merit. It's hard to implement those things, right? And I think that a lot of people struggle to lengthen that vessel and to, you know, swimming and that feel for the water, it's such a nebulous thing. And I hate to see people throwing away a lot of good money to those clinics when I see a lot of people that don't get much out of them. But every once in a while, you know, somebody does. I would prefer that, you know, you find a coach, you know, in your area that can teach you those things. And then you just, you know, I am a big advocate of people joining a master swim program, having a coach, having people that you swim with, and just having a lot of fun. I mean, I've been part of a master's swim program here in Austin since 1988, and the same one. And it's such a grounding force in my life. And, you know, every morning, 5 days a week, I get up and I swim from 7 to 8:15 with pretty much the same people I've been swimming with for the last almost, I don't know, 15 to 20 years. And it's a joy. It's an absolute joy. And it makes every day fantastic.
Yeah, I've actually recently done that. I started with a master swim group, and so we're swimming, you know, 5:30 in the morning. It's funny. I grew up, you know, I could swim to save myself, that, you know, and swim, but I never had any instruction whatsoever. And, you know, starting, you know, because so obviously swimming was my weakest of the three. And, you know, it seemed like when I would start to swim, you know, the faster I try to go, the more I try to dig. And, you know, so I started swimming with people, and that certainly helped. But I've noticed just in the last, you know, month swimming with this group, and like you say, being in lanes with people, and, you know, I giggle to myself. I feel like I'm trying out for the swim team at 52, and, you know, I think I'm going to get cut every day, you know, that I show up. But it's, you know, I learn something every day, and I feel a little bit more comfortable every day. And, you know, I'm actually starting to like getting in the water when it's cold and getting out, you know, even if, you know, I have to trick myself with a couple of dates, and my treat is a couple of dates and a cup of coffee on the way. So,
yeah.
So no, I do agree with you. You know, I wish I would have done it a lot earlier, because I do enjoy it, and I think that, you know, as an older person, I hate to use that word, but, you know, that the three sports have really helped me as far as staying healthy. Before I was just a runner, and I would get myself injured, and then you'd have to stop and rest and recover, and that would be the only time I'd ride a bike. You know, so since I've been doing all three, there's, you know, been less injury, so I really, really do like it. But I'm really enjoying the swimming. So, and the coach doesn't make too much fun of me, so that's good.
Yeah. No, one of the things I love about triathlon is that, you know, if your ankle is sore or you got a bad knee, you can swim, and then if your shoulder hurts from swimming, you know, you can bike. So there's one of the three sports you can always engage in. And, you know, knock on wood, I've been very healthy, but, you know, I know so many runners that, you know, they're just constantly plagued with hamstring injuries or knee injuries or foot issues or plantar fasciitis. And it seems like it's never ending. And so I like the balance and the diversity that you get with triathlons, and, you know, you're never really, overtraining in any one sport because of the variety that's involved.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I'm enjoying it. Well, yeah. I won't take up any more of your time, but I certainly do appreciate it, and I hope you do get to Florida with one of these retreats, and, you know, hope you stick your nose back into the triathlete population at some point. You know, wish all the luck in the world. We'll keep promoting.
Thank you very much. Tell me again. Where in Florida exactly are you?
I'm in Port Charlotte, which is it's on the west coast, about 45 minutes south of Sarasota.
Oh, Sarasota, okay.
Well, good, Tampa. Good, yeah, it's good, an hour and 15 minutes south of Tampa.
Yeah. All right, well, good. Well, I might be getting there in January, and if I do, I'll be sure to let you know.
Absolutely, look me up. So thank you very much, and good luck to you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Stuffed shells, and we make that with a combination of tofu with spinach. We use garlic and parsley and allspice for that. And actually, it tastes just like the old ricotta-typed stuffed shells that we used to have. The other thing that we made were mushroom meatballs, and that was real easy with just mushrooms pureed in the food processor with garlic and parsley, salt and little salt, pepper, and some nutritional yeast, and baked those at 350 for about a half hour, and that turned out well as good as well. We also had a green bean dish with some garbanzo beans and red peppers. The bok choy dish that I talked about earlier with pomegranate, pears, almond slices. Let's see what else. There were sliced tomatoes with basil and onion. Did have some homemade bread, pumpernickel with homemade spinach dip, some homemade hummus. We did mushrooms stuffed with tofu and roasted red pepper. We had stuffed peppers with wild rice. We had a risotto with butternut squash risotto. It was made by a friend that was really good. So we had quite the vegan feast on Christmas Eve, and we're still working on the leftovers. Again, if you'd like to get in touch with me, I'm at jamiedulaney@gmail.com, jamiedulaney@gmail.com. Love to see an iTunes review. A 5-star will get you a shout out on the podcast. I'd also like any questions you'd have. I can address those on the podcast as well, or give you an email back if you'd like. So be sure and contact me. Otherwise, Happy New Year, and I'll see you next week.